Hey, Progressive Radio Network listeners. So I just wanted to update you on a couple of things that are going on the actual Organic Gardener podcast itself. If you have ever thought about listening to a podcast, I encourage you to check them out. There's some great podcasts on iTunes and your favorite podcast app. But we've been running a 2018 Garden Goals Challenge where it's just for 8 days and it kind of talks you through creating some goals for your garden, whether you just want an earth-friendly landscape, you want to put some deep beds in, you're building your first garden, or you want to expand your garden if you're a backyard gardener. A lot of my listeners have been gardeners for many years. If you're looking to expand into the farmer's market, or have a CSA or something, you know, we're just trying to help you be more effective with your goals. And then Mike and I also over Christmas break came out with a free garden course. You can just go to freegardencourse.com and check that out. There's designed to have a new lesson each month. So thanks for listening. If there's anything we can do for you, please don't hesitate to email or reach out to us. I know many Progressive Radio Network listeners already have. So I'm glad you're liking the show and have a great new year. The Organic Gardener Podcast is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/OGP to support the show and see if you qualify. Health IQ customers save between 4 to 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ customers because physically active people have a lower risk of heart disease, cancer, and diabetes compared to people who are inactive. Learn more and get a free quote at healthiq.com/OGP. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today. So it is Tuesday, January 2nd, 2018, and I am supposed to be at a teaching meeting, but because we have so much snow here in Montana and the roads are basically blown closed everywhere, I am doing an interview that I think you guys are going to be like super excited about, an innovative family. My featured guest today, James Rowland from Cowboy Cricket Farms, is going to entertain us and tell us about some, you know, new, cool, you know, him and his wife are just visionaries. They're entrepreneurial. And I think they're going to surprise us all telling us about farming millions of crickets. So welcome to the show, James.
Hi, Jackie. Thank you so much for having me on. We are super excited to tell you a little bit about edible insect farming.
Okay, so edible insect farming, no less. I wonder if listeners are surprised, because when I told my husband, he's like, what, a cricket farm? And of course, I'm sure he's thinking fishing, fish bait, but you're actually talking about crickets that people eat. And I did find an article about you that I was reading that said that you guys went to some Montana State University bug buffet. So we're kind of excited to hear about that too. So why don't you start out telling us a little bit about yourself?
Well, my name's James, and my wife Kathy and I have lived all over the country. We were both in the Coast Guard. I was a reservist. She was active duty, and so that took us all over the place. And now I'm actually still in the military. I am a medical sergeant in the Montana Army National Guard, and we have three children. We live in Bozeman, Montana. We've lived here for about 2.5 years now, and basically, we love doing everything outside and trying to really, you know, get back to nature, do some rock climbing and ice climbing. We're a bit of adrenaline junkies as well. So, you know, anything that goes fast is pretty much up our alley. and we just love innovative things. And I think that's why, you know, the cricket farming has really just taken off for us. It's become our whole life and we love it, because we are truly at the cutting edge of agricultural innovation right now.
Okay. Well, let's just go there. Usually I ask about your first gardening experience, but we'll get to that like later. Let's go to cutting edge cricket farming. Like, where do you start? Like, how, where do you sell? What do people do? They eat them? Like, are they chocolate flavored, or they're just like a protein pill, or like, I know nothing.
So there's many different ways that you can use edible insects, just like any other animal protein, right? Not every cow is made into hamburgers. So Basically, what we do is we farm them here in Belgrade, Montana, and it takes about 8 weeks for them to reach maturity. We breed them, we raise them, we harvest them and everything right here. And after they're fully mature, we then freeze them to euthanize, and then they're dehydrated. From that, we can grind them down into a powder. Now, we do actually sell some of our crickets whole, roasted, and those are smoky jumpers, which are kind of like a tangy mesquite-flavored cricket. Or we grind them down to powder and sell that to food manufacturers and individuals, and we also use it in our chocolate chip cookies, which is a high-protein chocolate chip cookie.
I love that. Chocolate chirp cookies?
Correct.
Awesome. Okay. So let's see. You freeze them to euthanize them. So that sounds pretty cruelty-free. I mean, if you had to die, that sounds like a pretty fast, like it's like an instant freeze. I mean, they're probably pretty little. Well, they're probably kind of warm weather animals, right? Like they come out like crazy in August.
Absolutely. So not only is it, cruelty-free, but it's actually part of their natural life cycle. So generally what happens is, like you said, they're in the warmer months. When it starts getting cold, though, they go underground and then they go into stasis. So basically they just like fall asleep. Well, in the springtime, when it warms up, the younger, my son's jumping around on the bed here. So when it warms up, the younger, stronger ones wake up and they keep on hopping around and living their little cricket lives. Well, we basically emulate that. So we put them into the freezer. After about 10 minutes, they're in stasis. So they're actually still alive, but they look dead. And if you were to take them out of the freezer and put them back into the warm farm, which we keep at about 85 degrees year round, then they would actually wake up within about 20 or 30 minutes and start hopping around again. But after about 20 minutes in the freezer, they're actually just completely dead and ready to be dehydrated.
Well, that sounds cool. It's kind of like salmon. Like, I guess they call it a pescatarian. Like, I eat fish and I eat dairy, but I generally don't eat meat. But one of the reasons I eat fish is because salmon, you know, they're going to come up and they're just going to be laying along the creek bed after they spawn. And, you know, to me, it's like almost like a waste to just leave them there. So, and it's kind of my compromise with my husband. So, and then crickets. So, but how long would like a normal cricket live if they like kept living? I mean, they're probably not going to live all that long anyway, right?
No, their maximum lifespan is about 8 weeks, and that's under ideal conditions, assuming a predator doesn't get them. Most crickets die within the first few days of life because they get eaten. So we have the happiest, healthiest crickets in the world. I mean, they're fed a corn-free, soy-free, certified organic, all grown in Montana diet. We've done a huge amount of research over the last 8 to 10 months researching how to make the best feed possible for these crickets and for us, because whatever they eat, you know, that's the nutrition that we get. So by changing this feed around, not only do they have a fantastic life, but you know, we get better nutrition as well. And it's interesting because of how sustainable we are. We actually have a lot of vegan and vegetarian customers, even though crickets are very much animals. Yeah, it's so sustainable, and because of the humane slaughter practices we have, and because of the extreme nutritional density of these insects, it makes for basically a perfect protein and vitamin B source for vegan and vegetarian customers. Even though, again, they are animals, but people tend not to have the same issue, the ethical issues with eating bugs.
Yeah, well, and I mean, if their life cycle is only 8 weeks, I mean, they can practically be an adult before they're going to die anyway. So, let's see. How does, like, my big curiosity is, like, how big is your place that you're keeping 85 degrees in Montana all year long? Is it like a greenhouse? Like, how many do you have to grow? Like, and do you, like, how often do you have to harvest them?
Well, our facility is basically a warehouse, and it's back behind the airport in Belgrade. It's only 1,800 square feet, but we have 17-foot ceilings. And so really what we do is we use volume. Instead of just growing out, we grow up. Our facility is 1,800 square feet, but we have 17-foot ceilings. And because of that, we can grow up. So we have 7 layers of bins that we grow in, which goes up about 14 feet. And then we leave a little bit of room at the top to have some good airflow. And we can fit, theoretically, about 20 million crickets in our facility. We're nowhere near that right now. We have about 2 or 3 million crickets at the moment. And we just finished our last breed, so we won't start breeding again until about the middle of January. And then with this next breed, we'll probably have about 10 million crickets by the time that within the next few months.
Like 10 million more or 10 million total?
We'll have 10 million living crickets at that time. So you figure we're always harvesting as well. So every year we, at capacity, we can produce about 48,000 pounds of crickets in our little facility. You know, and that gives you an idea of that's 24 head of cattle. And we do that on a 8-week life cycle instead of a 2-year life cycle. And like you noted, we're harvesting them at the end of their life instead of right at the beginning. So it's humane, it's efficient, and it's just extremely tasty and nutritional.
Okay. Now, so like, are people like using it like protein? Like, because the other thing for me that drives me crazy, like if one more person tells me I should be eating hemp protein, I want to scream because it's so expensive. You can't grow it in the United States, so it's got to be imported from somewhere. And it's just like the most frustrating thing in the world. And if the, like, is, do people put them in protein shakes or like do you sprinkle it like nutritional yeast? Because my favorite thing I've been eating all for the break is like popcorn sprinkled with nutritional yeast. Like, what does it taste like? Is it nutty?
Yeah, but I have to say, someone turned me on to that, the popcorn with the nutritional yeast, and that's amazing. I love that stuff. I don't know a whole lot about it, but it sure does taste good.
Well, you know what? I discovered this winter, for one, I found this really cool organic, like multicolored popcorn, but the big secret was putting avocado oil with like Dr. Bragg's amino acids. Always before I'd used butter, but using that avocado oil just makes it like a meal. So a little tip for you there if you've been trying with the nutritional yeast.
Mm, yeah, I'll try that. We make popcorn for the kids all the time.
Yeah.
That's kind of, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up because the nutritional yeast has a lot of different uses, right? More than just sprinkling it on popcorn. Yeah. And that's kind of like our powder as well. So we have people that use it as just a, something to put into their smoothie or protein shake. And that's great. We have people that like it for the novelty, although that's actually not as many. Most people are buying it for the actual nutrition. We have a lot of people though that use it in their other recipes. So for example, our chocolate chip cookies are just regular chocolate chip cookies. They're delicious, soft chocolate chip cookies, just like you'd make at home. The difference is that we take out about 20% of the flour and replace it with cricket powder. And because of that, we get 10 grams of protein and a huge amount of iron in each and every cookie. So you could do that at home with your favorite recipe for breads or, you know, croissants, or we have people who put in salad dressings. It's really quite versatile. Anything that you can put a powder in, you can use our cricket powder in. We even have a hospital that's putting it in their macaroni and cheese so that their patients don't have to eat nothing but Ensures in order to get their protein. Instead, they can eat regular food that has this huge nutritional increase because they're using our cricket powder.
This is so cool. I love this. So let's see. Well, do you have anything that like I haven't asked any questions about you want to add?
About the crickets themselves, no, but I definitely have some interesting stuff to tell you about their frass. And that'll definitely be interesting to your gardener viewership or listeners, I guess.
Okay.
So like with any animal, they produce a lot of waste, and cricket poop is called frass, F-R-A-S-S.
Oh, I was like, what did he say? I guess I'll just wait till he talks more. Frass is there. Okay, cool.
Frass, yep. So that's cricket poop. It's a fertilizer, right? It's their droppings. And just like you do with any other kind of manure, it's a fantastic fertilizer soil amendment. And so we sell it in bulk, and it's very dry. We sell both in retail, 2-pound retail containers, and we sell bulk to farmers. And what we've found is not only does it have, you know, is it high in nitrogen and has good phosphorus, it also has a lot of iron, which is great for your leafy greens. But it has another really unique feature. All insect frass basically tricks the plant into thinking it's being attacked. And what this does is it causes the plant to increase production of secondary metabolites. Now, what we would call these are spices. It makes your peppers hotter, your basil more basil-y. It also does one other thing. While we like it and we get the benefit of the increased flavor, the insects that are trying to eat these plants do not like it. The reason why these chemicals exist in the plants is because they're basically natural pesticides. And so by using the frass ahead of time, before the insects get there, it causes the plants to go into this mode where they're defensive and they're trying to fend off insects. And so when the bugs come and start trying to eat the plants or get close to the plants, they're repelled or they're poisoned or it creates, you know, different odd effects for the insects. And so you don't have to use as many pesticides. So it's like a two-in-one applicator of both nutrition for your plants and protection for your plants.
This is so cool. I knew, like, I was like, this is just meant to happen because, like, I wasn't even going to come. I was going to, like, miss this morning and be late and come over to Browning this today. And, like, we would not be doing this interview. I just feel like I was meant to have this day off so we could do this interview. Cause this is just addressing so many problems, so many questions I get from people. Like, I've been creating this garden course, and one of the big things I've been talking about is soil and compost and manure and where do you get manure. And so my question is, like, if people want to do this on a small scale, like, can you have like a little backyard cricket? Like, people have bees or like people have chickens or people like have any other animal, or like, is like the processing thing, like, you have to freeze them? Do you have to have more than just a regular standard freeze? Like, is there, how complicated is this?
You know, it's really not that complicated, but unfortunately there's not very much literature. Well, basically there's no literature out there on how to farm crickets, especially for food use. And that's why we've been working on, we're slowly working on a book that people can just download and it'll give you the information. But in the meantime, if you go on our YouTube page, youtube.com/cowboycrickets, I have a series on there of how to farm crickets, and it takes you step by step through our exact process. And so anyone could go on there and see the temperature, the humidity, the, you know, daily routine, everything that you need to know. And if there's any other questions, I've put up a few Q&A videos for things that people wanted clarification on. And I'm always updating that. Every week we put out new videos. So there are ways that people can find out how. In short, it depends on where you live as far as what approach you take. If you live in Louisiana, you can probably have something just out in your garage and you don't need much prep. If you live in Montana, where it gets, you know, negative 20 degrees, then, well, you're going to need at least a heater.
Because, but could you, like, just do it seasonally? Like, couldn't you just have the crickets during the summer? Do you have to have them all year long?
You could do it seasonally. You would just have to start with new crickets every year. But, yeah, you could. There's no way to, I mean, you can make them go into stasis and go dormant, but it can be tough to control. You're going to have a lot of loss. And that's one of the ways that they naturally are kept down as far as their numbers in the wild, is most of them die off in the winter. Only a few, the youngest, strongest ones, wake up in the springtime. And so you're not going to have very many crickets every spring if you're doing it that natural way year round. But if you were to keep them in, say, your basement or in your heater room and just make sure they don't get out because that gets annoying, then you could do it actually on the cheap pretty easily. It probably only takes $50 to get started in cricket farming.
Wow. So what's it like to try to find markets? Like, have you had pretty good luck with markets? I mean, you're selling to a hospital. Like, are they easy to transport? Are they light besides?
Well, by the time that you grind them up and you turn them into a powder, yeah, it takes about 2,500 crickets to make a pound of powder. So it doesn't take much to transport them. We are licensed and registered food facility with both the FDA and the Montana Department of Health and Human Services. And we're actually just working on finishing our own commercial kitchen. So we'll have that in place here soon, and we won't have to rent kitchen space anymore. It's not tough to sell them, really. The thing is, you have to be able to make quantities that people want to buy. So there's a few boutique farmers out there that just make a few pounds every month of flavored cricket, and they sell those at farmers markets and stuff, and they do fine. But if you want to get into true commercial scale farming, you have to be able to produce thousands of pounds a month. And that's what we're trying to build up to. So what we're doing right now, since that is very difficult and takes a lot of time and space, resources, we're developing a network of cricket farmers who will use our methodologies and will sell their crickets to us. So basically, we give them all the information and all the resources. They buy the equipment that they need and get an initial setup of our crickets, use our feed, and every time that they have a new harvest ready, we'll buy every pound of cricket that they can produce. And that way we can do all the marketing and distribution and processing. And they don't have to worry about developing an entire business and entire brand off of it. Instead, we take care of that.
Oh my gosh, sign me up. I'm so interested. This is awesome. And I totally feel like we could get this started this summer.
Oh yeah. We're super excited. We're even working on, if you look at our YouTube videos, like I said, it shows you how to farm crickets, but that's all doing it the by hand manual way. So what we're working on right now is actually an automation system that is just something you can set on a tabletop, basically. So you could have one bin or you could have 10,000 bins, and it's all the same. And our software will control the hardware that controls the environment. And so you don't have to go in every 3 days and do all this maintenance. Instead, you pretty much put the crickets in there. 8 weeks later, you give them a breeding material and then you harvest, and that's it. So we're trying to make it to where people don't have to have this huge learning curve. We're very fortunate that we've had an entomologist, a biochemist, several research assistants, and enormous support from our state. And that's the only reason why, after a year of researching and doing this every single day, we finally have methods for growing the crickets correctly. But that's not realistic for most people to do. So we want to be able to just hand them this system and say, look, this will take care of everything for you. And, anyone could afford it because it's just a couple hundred dollars for one of these systems. And it'll pay for itself if you just sell us the crickets.
Nice. Sounds perfect. And I don't know, I just like all the things, pieces about it that, it's providing a nice protein, it's healthy for people, it's sustainable, it's creating new innovative jobs. It all sounds like a good thing, which, because I just like the interview, is it the very last one? I think I just posted like 2 days ago, is with this woman, Nina Heinzinger. She's from the Department of Public Sanitation, and she talked about the cottage food laws and how to create value-added products for farmers. And like, so this sounds like, a nice thing to add to your, if you already have a farm or a small market and you're, really struggling, that this would be something that you could add that wouldn't take too much extra work. And would, be like another product to enhance your farm that you already have.
Absolutely. I mean, it's really interesting. Some of the people we've had interest with becoming one of our network farmers, we've had entomologists who, already are familiar with it. But most of the people that have come to us are actually farmers, including cattle farmers and barley farmers. And, basically they're thinking, or chicken farmers has been a big one. They're thinking, hey, I've got this, my old chicken farm, this building that I'm not actually using anymore because I just built a brand new one. And I need something to do with it. You could put crickets in there really easily and grow, millions and millions of crickets. Or you could put a Connex box on that quarter acre of your cow farm that you can't use. That outbuilding that you're not using. And so it's so adaptable that really you can do it almost anywhere. You could put them right in your garage. And so we have people in San Francisco who are thinking, man, I don't even have a car. I just bike to work, but I have a garage I don't use. I could put crickets in there. And it's absolutely true. There, you can grow them just about anywhere. They're so easy to grow as long as you keep the environment correct.
I love that.
Before we get to the root of things,
let's take a minute to thank our sponsors and affiliate links. The Organic Gardener Podcast is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/OGP for Organic Gardener Podcast to support the show and see if you qualify. Over half of Health IQ customers save between 4 to 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ customers because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, a 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people just like you, green future growers. Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/OGP or mention the promo code OGP when you talk to a Health IQ agent.
Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like the other Green Future Growers. Well, the Organic Gardener Podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast/book or type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get listening to your first audiobook today.
So this would be like the part of the show where I would say, let's get to the root of things. But I'm going to actually start with tell us about your very first gardening experience. Were you a kid? Were you an adult? What'd you grow? Who were you with? Where did you grow up even? Did you grow up in Montana?
So I didn't grow up in Montana. I grew up in Long Beach, California. And my first gardening experience was probably with my mom in our backyard, and we grew cucumbers and corn and tomatoes. We've always had tomato and pepper plants as long as I can remember. And so, that's a big thing in Southern California is tomatoes, avocados, but avocado takes, that's a big tree. So we always had just these little farms and, or not farms, little gardens. And I also kept some edible flowers for a while. Those have a nice little peppery taste to them.
I just saw a whole thing on edible flowers the other day. And there's a lot more edible flowers than I realized. I usually just stick to nasturtiums and stuff. And even Mandy Gert, who's a local farmer in Kalispell here, puts out this incredible package of edible flowers that are lovely and stuff. So, So do you have a least favorite activity you have to do with the crickets? Something kind of force yourself to do?
Yeah, I guess cleaning. I hate just sweeping the farm and doing the things that aren't actually related directly to the crickets. But it's something that we have to do. We keep extremely high sanitary procedures. So the farm's actually completely sanitized weekly. And it's swept and mopped every day. It's just not something I like doing. Luckily, We have been able to hire on a farm manager, and so she takes care of a lot of that now and does a phenomenal job. And so I've been able to kind of step back into my marketing role a little bit more.
Hey, I'm so glad I did ask you that, because that's cleaning is definitely, like, I've been like thinking on my day off, well, I could go clean my classroom and I probably could clean my apartment, but that's like the last thing I'm going to do on a free day off. I'm so glad I asked you that. All right. So then on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do with the crickets?
I really, really like when the crickets just hatch and you've got just tens of thousands of baby crickets going around and you have to make up the new bins, because they, when you go to pour them into the new bin, it's almost like a liquid, because they just kind of flow out of there and you see them spread out from this ball of crickets into this like whole carpet of crickets. And it's just fascinating to watch. That's definitely my favorite part.
So the funny thing is, we just read, or we didn't read the whole thing, but parts of A Cricket in Times Square, you know? And like, so do they make noise? And like, do their wings, do they sing? I thought you were going to say something like they make really pretty noise songs.
The males are the ones that chirp. They aren't too loud. And right now we don't have any chirping because we're waiting for our oldest ones to mature. After this breed, we should have chirping year round every single day after that. We're almost done closing that gap. But yeah, their songs are really pretty and it is fun, especially on the tours to, you know, people walk into the farm and you just hear all this chirping everywhere. And you know, the kids especially find it amazing.
So where you guys are in Belgrade, right? So if listeners are coming out to Yellowstone Park, like how far are you from Yellowstone? Belgrade's near there, isn't it? Like, isn't there a road directly out of Belgrade that goes down to Yellowstone? It's like an hour drive.
Yep. It's about an hour, hour and a half, you know, depending on weather and I guess, you know, how much you abide by the speed limit.
But it's a beautiful drive,
get there quickly.
Right?
Oh, it's an amazing drive year round too. I mean, it's, the roads get pretty rough in the winter time, going down to Yellowstone and, you know, if it's 10 degrees in Bozeman, Belgrade, it's probably -20 down there. It's way, way colder, but it's absolutely gorgeous. And then in the summertime, you know, you can go and drive through the whole park and they have, different adventures you can take, tons of great hiking. And yeah, if you're down there and you're coming up to Bozeman, which a lot of people do, cause there's amazing activities and things to see in Bozeman, then, we would love to have you by for a tour.
Yeah. I just think that'd be so fun for listeners if they're coming to Yellowstone anyway, or if they're flying out of Bozeman and they have to do the drive from Yellowstone to Bozeman.
And you know, we're just on like the other side of the airport.
Right? Because yeah. Bozeman and Belgrade are pretty much close. If I remember right, like Mike and I, it seems like we've done that drive quite a few times. And I just remember that road being really windy and pretty, right? Like it follows the river and it's just like one of the most spectacular drives. I'm thinking of the right drive, right? Down there. And
then
if people are wondering about Yellowstone in the winter, people go snowmobiling in there, right? Is what they do. They go down to West Yellowstone and there's like all those snowmobile things, and probably you can go cross country skiing. I don't know.
Yep.
I don't think I've been to Yellowstone in the winter, because we usually have been like going like on our way to Colorado. Like Mike's family he was born in Colorado and his grandmother was down in Colorado Springs. So it's like, it's been years since we've done it, but it seems like that would have been where we were headed through.
Yeah, it's a beautiful drive and there's tons of snowmobiling there in the winter time.
Yeah. So what's the best, I usually ask, what's the best gardening advice you've ever received? What's the best cricket business advice you've ever received? Have you talked
Be
to
patient.
Other people that have cricket businesses?
Yes, actually that's where we got a lot of our information from, is a couple books, an entomologist that we work with at Montana State University named Florence Dunkel, but also a couple other cricket farms, one in Oregon called Kraft Crickets and one in Iowa called Iowa Cricket Farm. And they have been very helpful with, you know, helping us kind of get through some of these obstacles and these learning moments. And I remember our very first hatch, we had the adults, they all laid their eggs, and then, you know, they got older and we harvested them. And so we had zero crickets. All we had were eggs, and we didn't mark the dates on them very well, and somehow kind of got lost with when they had actually been laid and how long it was. And we thought it had been like 3 weeks, and it should have only been 10 to 16 days for them to hatch, and we didn't have anything. Well, it turns out it only been like 9 days. And we called them, we were freaking out saying, I don't get it. What's going on? And they're saying, you should have just thousands and thousands of crickets. You know, let's check this and this and this. And ultimately they said, just be patient. Don't throw it out yet. Just give it a few more days. And the next day we had 10,000 baby crickets, and we felt relieved. And so I think that a big thing to learn from any kind of farming or gardening is just be patient, because you're dealing with nature and you just can't rush it.
Oh, that is awesome. You're a great storyteller. And that's so true that you have to be patient. And it's very apropos to me today, because I'm feeling very, I think, stressed about my podcast in general. And I spent a lot of time working on it this vacation, and I'm not getting the results that I was hoping. And I was kind of down this morning. So I'm so glad we talked. She really like put a big smile on my face. I'm feeling much better. So what about a favorite tool? Like, if you had to move and could only take one tool or thing from your cricket farm, what could you not live without now? If you guys get uprooted with the garden and have to go somewhere. And how does that work?
You know, moving it would be difficult, especially in the wintertime. As far as a tool for the cricket farm, you know, nothing that we use is all that special, really. I guess a knife. And we don't really use a knife for the crickets per se, but we open up a lot of boxes and have to cut a lot of things. So, you know, I usually have a pocket knife on me, and I use it just about every single day for something. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to bring one tool with me somewhere, it's going to be a knife. That way I can open up everything else.
I can totally relate. Like, I don't go anywhere without my pocket knife. Like, it's always in my purse, and I'm always surprised that everybody doesn't have a pocket knife and a headlamp. It's my other one I don't ever go anywhere without. And I don't know if that's just part of being in Montana, but my knife actually mostly gets used for like snacks. We eat a lot of food on the go, because in Montana, you're always driving and you're always going long distances. And to me, we buy a lot of cheese at the store, or apples, or whatever that I'm slicing. I don't know. It just seems like a knife for picnicking is my big one. So how about a favorite recipe? What's your favorite recipe you like to cook from the crickets?
I think it's a pretty simple one, actually. I like to take our smoky jumper crickets, which is a recipe in on itself, but I like to take the whole roasted smoky jumpers and then put them on a soup, and or especially lentils, you know, boiled mashed lentils, and it just adds a little bit of texture and spiciness and flavor to them. And I mean, it's simple, I guess. You're just putting one thing on top of another thing, but that's my perfect. Favorite way to use them.
How about a favorite internet resource? Where do you find yourself surfing a lot? YouTube?
Oh, YouTube. Yeah, YouTube is king for information. I'm on there literally a few hours a day learning something. There's just so many free resources there, and you can quickly compare and contrast other people's information, so you can see what is working across the board and what's not working and where the outliers are. And I think it's just a fantastic resource for learning just about anything. But in my case, I've used it a lot for cricket farming.
I love that. It's so true that YouTube is changing the world and the way people learn and access to things. I hope with this new net neutrality bill, we're not all going to be in for trouble. So I can't believe more people aren't more upset about that, because you know, having access to the internet, free and fair access seems like a pretty big issue. I don't know. How about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine or a blog or anywhere? Thing you can read.
Well, there is one specific book. It's a very technical book. I guess it's not technical in this as far as reading some peer reviewed articles, which are almost impossible to follow. But and I don't have it in front of me, so I'm probably going to get the name wrong. But it's by the editor was Aaron Dossey at All Things Bugs, and it's called Insects. Rearing Insects for Food and Feed, I want to say. And it had many great contributors, including our entomologist on staff, Florence Dunkel. And that's been a really, really good book for figuring out where the research is and where it isn't and what information is still missing. And, you know, that's what we try to focus on is, okay, well, we know this, but there's so many questions still out there. Let's try to answer a couple of those.
All Things Bugs, the book. Insects, a Sustainable Food Ingredients.
There you go.
Is that it? One. Okay, cool.
Yep.
Okay, and I'll put the link to that in the show notes. All right. Well, how about any business advice for people? Like if listeners want to get started in the cricket industry or just any business. I mean, I guess if they want to get started in the industry, the thing to do is call you because it sounds like you're like growing some green jobs out there.
Yeah, absolutely. If someone wants to get into cricket farming, I would implore them to reach out to us. We'll be putting out a lot more information later this month, actually. Every day this month, we're launching something new for the new year. And one of those new things is going to be some more details about our automation systems, as well as our price listings and stuff for what we're going to buy crickets for from other people. And so if anyone is interested in cricket farming and wants a guaranteed revenue source for it, we're your folks. We have so many orders to fill. It's insane. So we really need farmers on our team. As far as business advice.
How do they reach out to you? Do they email you? Do you want to give them your email or sign up for your mailing list or go to your website or which I can't access at school today, but you probably can.
I would say visit our website, cowboycrickets.com, and sign up for the mailing list. That's a really good way because I'll be putting out more information on there as things come out. And then you can also reach out to me at james@cowboycrickets.com. And that's my direct email. And, you know, it sometimes takes me a day or two to get back because I probably get about 150 plus emails a day. Oh. And so I try to respond to them if I can. So it takes me a minute, but I will get back to you. And those would be the two best ways to get a hold of us just in general. Also, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Cowboy Crickets and YouTube. YouTube.com/cowboycrickets. So any of those are great ways to get a hold of us as well.
Okay, but then you were going to say something else about advice about business before I interrupted you.
Oh yeah, so we've had a few different businesses in many different sectors to varying degrees of success, and I think that I guess I've got a couple pieces of advice. One. Find where you can get stuff for free. And this is both money in the form of grants and it's a lot of work. So it's not really free. You don't just say, may I have money and they go, okay. You usually have to do a lot of work and it has to be something worthwhile. But sometimes those resources are advice and help. You can talk to places like Blackstone Launchpad at MSU or, look for your local SCORE chapter. And you can have retired entrepreneurs who are just looking to help someone, and they will help you for free.
Yeah, they're so great and super accessible and very
absolutely
knowledgeable professionals.
Yeah, they've got tons of experience. They're super professional. A lot of times they have great connections within different industries, or they know the people that do. So definitely look for what you can get for free. And on that note also, don't be afraid to ask. I remember when I was in middle school, I had a crush on this girl, and I never told anyone. And my dad said, what's the worst that can happen? She says no. And I didn't understand it at the time. I thought, no, well, that's it. You're done, right? But it's not true. And in business, you're just dating. Everyone is forming a relationship while you're networking. And so the worst that can happen is they say no. So, but they can only say no or yes if you ask. And you'd be surprised. Most people want to say yes to everything. They want to help. They want more connections. They want to get in different industries. But they don't even know you exist unless you tell them you do. So don't be afraid to have the ask. Don't be afraid to sell. And see what you can get for free.
That's awesome. You know how Facebook has those new ask and answer questions to tell people about yourself? And the thing that I said for if I could tell myself, my younger self something over, I was like, don't worry about boys. You'll have more love than you ever imagined. Plus, like, get your master's before marriage. Because I'm always telling my granddaughter, get your master's before marriage. And like, I'm even kind of sketchy about that anymore because, because of my podcasting group, and like, there's so many things, so many people to learn out there without actually having to have a college degree, and college is so expensive right now. Like, until they either change that algorithm with the way college costs, like, I don't know. I mean, if you're going to be a lawyer, you're going to be a teacher, you have to have a master's. So it kind of depends on what you want to do. But for a lot of people, there are other ways to make a living anymore, or to learn and get a higher education besides just the traditional college route. But I definitely am like, I don't know if that
helps. I absolutely agree. I don't think that, both my wife and I are going to school right now for our own purposes. Mine has to do with the Army as well. They want me to commission. And because of that, I have to have a degree. So simply put, I have to have, I have to go back to school. And I always learn something in a class, but it's amazing how many things I go into these classes and they want to teach me basics on something that I literally teach. So, taking the introduction to communications class, it's like, but I teach hundreds of people how to, either farm crickets or how to do medical procedures within the Army, or how to do basic troop leading procedures. I can talk. Okay.
I know, but they should have some experience credits or something for that. Or like, if you've worked that, I totally feel your frustration, and I want to get my master's more than anybody. Like, I applied, I just can't come up with the money to pay for it, or I would have my master's. So I know how that goes. If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about, or project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
I think what we need to do is find ways to focus people's minds onto changing the world in a positive way that's accessible to them. And basically what I mean by that are things like, one of the projects that we're actually just starting to work on is, like I said, both my wife and I are veterans. And so we are working on a way to give these cricket farms, in our case, to disabled veterans that are out there, a lot of which are suffering with, PTSD or other issues. And there's a lot of non-veterans that also have these issues, right? Because people have trauma in their life. And what people found is that agriculture is a really good way to keep your mind busy and find peace. In fact, one of my friends, Mark, he's a former Coastie as well, and he has PTSD. And the way that he found to solve that better than the VA ever gave him, he actually went into cricket farming. And he has a great podcast out there as well, all about edible insects. And so what I would like to see is people find these creative, innovative ways to solve another problem, in this case, mental illness, and do that while helping the world instead of taking from it. So let's give back and get more innovative agriculture out there while helping people find peace in their own mind.
Oh my gosh, that's so beautiful. Are you a millennial? How old are you?
I think technically I am. I was born in 88. So I used to think I was Generation Y, but apparently I'm a millennial. And in fact, I was told, I was coming back from New York City a couple months ago, and I was in the airport, and I'd spent all my cash earlier that day, because everywhere I went just wanted cash. They wouldn't take credit cards. And I went to go get a shoe shine, or rather price out one. A friend of mine and I were going to get our shoes shined, and the guy only took cash. I said, oh, okay, well, bummer. The gentleman who was getting his shoes shined at the time said, and, you know, freaking millennials, you never have cash. And I'm just thinking, you have no idea who I am. And come to find out, I guess technically by the definition of 1984 or later, yes, I am. But I just don't really feel that way because it's not how I was raised. And, you know, I've served a decade in the military. So I don't think that the fact that I didn't have $10 of cash on me at the time is really a good way to indicate that.
Well, what you don't know about my show is I love millennials, because the millennials I talk to are amazing world changers who care about our planet just like you do, and who are probably like, dude, why don't you have a little square thing on your phone for me to pay for my, and like, I go crazy when I go to New York City. I love that about Montana. You can walk into the town pump, buy a newspaper for a dollar with your check card and get cash back. And the machine will say, would you like cash back? And like, you go outside of Montana and people look at you like, what? You want cash back with your check card? It's like, this is 2017. I love millennials. And I love millennials because they are rock stars like you who care about our planet and do amazing things like you're doing and care about other veterans and care about, like in Montana, we have one of the highest suicide rates in the nation. And that you're changing things for people that have PTSD. And, you know, here I live on, you know, I just took a historical trauma class. Like, I know a lot about trauma all over the place. And, like, even where my home is in Lincoln County, like, we have one of the highest unemployment rates. So we have a lot of socioeconomical, you know, issues there and people who have had a lot of trauma there. And so I think it's so important, and what you said and about agriculture can change people's lives. And I just think you're one of the most amazing rock star millennials I have talked to. So don't worry about that shoe shine guy and getting his shoe shine, because he's just ignorant.
Thank you.
So, all right. Well, do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to, I don't know, reach into the dirt and start their own cricket farm? Not that you haven't given us like a million. Like, I love this interview. I'm so glad we talked today.
Well, thank you. It's been, you know, great speaking with you as well. As far as quotes go, I don't know, most of my friends know me as that the guy that always has something to say about everything. So usually I've got something, but I guess I don't have anything specific to give out as far as inspirational quote. You know, today's a good day to start. I know a lot of people have said that before, but it's true. As far as businesses go, start now. It's never too early. And you'll probably fail, and that's okay.
Do you listen to Entrepreneur on Fire? Do you listen to John Lee Dumas?
No, that doesn't sound familiar.
Well, you should get on his show. And he's a veteran too, so he would love everything you have to say. And he probably, some of his listeners would probably love to be cricket farmers. He has a great podcast called Entrepreneur on Fire, and he's the one that taught me how to podcast. And I can't remember if he's like right on the edge. Like, he's always like, if I'm a millennial, I'm like the oldest millennial, because I think he is like 37. Born in 95. I think millennials are from 1980 to 95 in there. But I just think he will like a lot of what you have to say. And I have
truly. Oh, yeah, I'll have to reach out to him.
So Okay, well, anything else? You know what I did want to ask you, and I might like edit this and put it back at the beginning, but like, do you have anything to tell people about like getting a kitchen started? You were talking about getting a, what's it called? A commercial kitchen, like what that process is like?
Oh yeah, that has been a process. So my wife, Kathy, is actually HACCP certified, and that's your basically your plan for how to keep things safe. We have a lot of experience with building small businesses and with, you know, creating and buying equipment and creative financing and all that. And yet, with all of that experience, this kitchen has been the biggest pain in my butt I have ever experienced in business. Because, most importantly, you have to deal with the government. And everything is slow. And even in Montana, where things are really fast in Montana compared to California or New York, you know, or any big city or state with a high population, things are fast here. You can talk to people really easily because we only have 1 million people in the whole state. But still, we are 11 months into this project, 2 locations into this project, and we had to go through some zoning variances. Because of our what's called a COSA, Certificate of Subdivision Approval. Basically, it said there can only be one business per lot, even though every lot in our whole community down there has more than one business, it seems. Some of them have 20, but we had 2, so that was too many when we went to actually get our licensing. They don't have to get licensing, they just exist. So it's been a really big struggle to get this thing going. And we are now just a few weeks away from actually having it. We're waiting on our last piece of equipment that got ordered this morning, a cooler that's coming in. And so we are really, really close. We have our approvals and everything. We just need our final licensing inspection, and then we're done. So we're super excited. But from all that, if I were to say anything, gosh, I don't know. Some of this data, some of this information, I still don't know where to find it. So I would say find someone that has gone through the process and is willing to just help you. You can pay people and you pay them a lot of money. But if you can find a friend who has done this and at least can give you some advice, that would be the best thing. Because you're going to have a lot of really specific questions. And it's a very in-depth process. And when in doubt, give them too much information, so that nothing could be held up.
Awesome. Well, who knew? Okay. Well, thank you so much, James, for sharing with us today. And just, do you want to just tell listeners one more time what your website and your email address if they want to start a cricket farm or just ask you any questions or anything?
Sure. We would love to have people visit our website, cowboycrickets.com. We're on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, all at Cowboy Crickets. And my email address is james@cowboycrickets.com. Kathy's is kathy@cowboycrickets.com. That's with a K and a Y. And, you know, we'd love to hear from anyone that wants to start a cricket farm that would like to work with us, or anyone that has, say, a specialty food store or a grocery store or a gym, and they're looking for that really neat, innovative product to put in their store. Our chocolate chirp cookies sell all over the country now, and we're always looking for more locations. So, you know, please reach out to us. We have really, really reasonable minimums for our wholesale accounts, and we love hearing feedback from customers. So just let us know if you have any questions.
All right. I'm going to have to go look at the health food store and see if there's some there to try. Well, thanks again, James, and you have a great day.
You as well. Thank you so much.
Hey, Green Future Growers. Don't forget to get your copy of the 2018 Organic Gardener Podcast, Garden Journal, and Data Keeper, available now at Amazon.com. It's a place to keep track of your organic gardening journey, where you can record temperature, weather, recipes, produce that you grew, produce that you bought, and just all your successes and failures and challenges and dreams for the future, all your garden goals.
keep them track of them in one place. 225 pages that will go through each week of the year for the 2018 year. And just there's blank pages in there where you can sketch or write or do anything that will help you record your journey. So don't forget to get a copy of the 2018 Garden Journal and Data Keeper available at Amazon. You can go to the organicgardenerpodcast.com/2018 for the link.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And it will link right to the show notes and all that we've talked about on today's show. Thanks for listening, and remember to grow local.